Hello, hola, que pasa, good evening, what's happening? This is Larry Goins, live from Lake Wiley, South Carolina. Hope everybody is doing good today.
Yes, we are.
Excellent. I'm glad. We got a lot of people on the line tonight, so we might be here a while. And I have worked up a sweat. I've been playing music for the last hour, jamming to some old-time rock and roll. But hey, it's time for the Q&A calls, so we're here. And also, one of the things I wanted to do and say was each week we have new people come on. So I wanted to say if you're new, if you're a brand-new Inner Circle member, I want you to go ahead and give a shout-out and say who you are and where you're from, and everybody else can welcome you to the call tonight. Who do we have on here that's new this week?
Hey,
Larry.
Sarah from Oregon.
Awesome. Excellent. Go ahead. Anybody else shout out?
Barbara from Florida.
Barbara, how are you? We just talked today. Congratulations and welcome aboard.
Thank you.
This is Janet in Cincinnati.
Hey, Jan. How are you?
Real good.
Awesome. Anybody else want to jump in? Maybe we didn't hear you earlier, or if you didn't speak up earlier, you want to jump in?
Larry?
Yes.
Jeff from Connecticut.
Jeff from Connecticut. What's happening?
You're happening, dude.
I'm glad you're here. Glad you made it. Good. Anybody else want to jump in? Whether you're new or not, jump in, say your name, where you're from, if you'd like.
Dave McGee in Richmond, Virginia.
What's up, Dave?
I'm on. How you doing?
Brian in Charlotte.
Great. Who else we got?
This is Don here in Houston.
What's happening, Don? How are you?
Doing good.
Excellent. Glad you made it. So if you're new on the call, here's what we do. It's not a planned agenda, but what we do is I'm on here and I will answer any and all questions whenever. Everybody's very respectful. If somebody jumps in with a question, other people let them. If you ask one or two questions, give somebody else some time to chime in and get their questions answered as well, and then we can come back around to you. So I'll be on here absolutely as long as you need me to be. Sometimes we're on here for a half an hour or 45 minutes. Sometimes it's a couple hours. But it's entirely up to you, and I am here for you. So having said that, who would like to go first?
I'll go
first. I'm willing. Okay.
Okay, I heard a guy's voice first.
Yes, Dave McGee.
Dave, what's up?
Well, as you know, Forrest is out, my son, buying the properties, which he's purchased for him, or we've got contracts for four.
Yeah, you guys have done four deals since you left the office about a month or so ago.
Now we're trying to sell them with owner financing.
Awesome.
And I'm not saying I'm running into resistance, but here's what some of my problems are, and I'll tell you.
Sure.
So I sit up at a property, and it's a good little ways away. It's an hour away from where I live. And make appointments with people who never show. And so I don't know really what to do with sort of that. Do I keep calling before I go, or do I email them, or just what I do to try to make sure that they're going to come and my time wasn't wasted.
Right.
And I wonder, and I also wonder, Larry, second question too is, we're selling these houses as is, but they're not cleaned up. And so we have a double wide. It's kind of, you know, not on a really nice clean side of things. And I've let people go in and look at them, and they come out kind of like, ugh.
Right.
I don't know any part of that. So my question is, even though, and we haven't closed on it, so we really can't really go in and do anything right now legally, but just saying, should we wait until we get it cleaned up to show people or what?
Well, I think that's a personal choice, and it depends. typically with a HUD house, and we personally buy a lot of HUD houses. They've been cleaned out and they're totally empty. Even if they're like, if the house smells, it's got.
Well, they're clean. They're cleaned out, but I mean, you know, it's just still nastiness. You know, they don't scrub them. They don't clean them that well. You know,
right.
The toilets have got black stuff in the bottom, and I mean, you know, somebody coming through there goes, they don't have the vision to see it. You know, like it's cleaned up and what it looks like.
Right, and that probably is true. That you're going to have some people that will turn their nose up at it. But you have to do, well, first of all, you have to do, you know, a couple of things. You have to set them up in advance in the sense that basically you might say something along the lines of, you know, now I want you to know, we haven't been to the house. We haven't cleaned it up. So, you know, you could say if you want to, we can do one of two things. You know, we can get the house cleaned up for you before you move in, or if you'd like to, you know, you could do that yourself. If you want to charge them, you could do that, or you could say we charge X for the cleanup. Most people choose to do their own cleanup. It's entirely up to you. So you could do that if you want to, depending on how you want to, you know, structure your deal. You know what I mean? You could just set them up front and say, look, now this is a house. That now we handpicked it because of the condition, not the cleanliness. So, of course, it's been vacant for a little while, so it's going to need a good cleaning. You know, would you rather do that or would you rather us do that? If you're willing to do it yourself, you could say that. If not, mm-hmm. You could say we've priced it accordingly because we know that it needs a good cleaning. So we priced it accordingly.
And then the other part of my question is, you know, how do you get the people to actually show up? That they say they're going to show up, you know.
Okay.
Well, it sounds great to me. I'm going to be there, and I'll meet you there. And you
right. Well, first of all, I'm not really sure where you heard about going out and meeting them, because we don't meet our people. We give them the address and have them go look at it, but we don't ever meet our people.
Okay.
Yeah, we never meet them. We never go see them. In fact, many of the people we've closed deals with, we've never seen them face-to-face.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but if you do want to go out there, if you want to continue to driving out there, you can say, look, I'm 2 hours away from this property. I'm going to go ahead and make arrangements. I had another appointment, but I'm going to go ahead and make arrangements. So I'm driving 2 hours just to meet you, nobody else. So do me a favor, if for any reason you can't make it, please let me know in advance before I leave to drive out there. Would you do that for me? You promise me? Because you wouldn't believe some of the people that I have talked to, and they said they would be out there, and I drove 2 hours for nothing. You're not going to do that to me, are you?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You basically shame them into showing up.
Okay, thanks.
Sure. Did that help?
Yeah. I think we're kind of like, I just wonder if we're over-advertising because we're not really ready to close yet on our HUDs, but we're advertising for them, kind of like you said to do.
Uh-huh.
But if people go out there and look at it, it's sort of like, this one double wide, it's right adjacent to a house, and the guy's out there whacking away on cars, and he has his air wrench going on and all that kind of stuff. And the house that he lives in is a piece of crap. And so I think people are kind of turned off when they go out and look at the piece of crap, you know, and they look at the house that we're trying to sell, and he's out there whacking away on cars and everything. It's sort of like a big turnoff.
Well, you know what? That's something that you can't do anything about, because there's one thing you can't change about a house, and that's the location. So that's something in doing your due diligence. I mean, obviously, you've either been there or sent somebody, and you know about it. So if you know that's going to be a big deterrent in being able to sell the house, then you may not want to close on it if you don't have it sold before it comes time to close.
Yeah.
if it's a big enough problem where you feel like, yeah, man, everybody that goes out there. But I would start talking to the people and asking them, you know, when you show them, you know, when you show them, you know, give them the address and they go out and look at it, you know, just ask them, you know, if they either don't call you back or whatever, call them up and say, listen, they want me to find out what's going on. Why did you not want to look at the inside of the house? Or why did you not call me back? What happened? What's changed? Well, I don't like the neighborhood. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. The house is dirty. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This one girl had $20,000 cash to put down, and I told her, I said, I wouldn't put it all down in this house. I said, put the $5,000 down, and I would go ahead, if I was you, put new carpet in and invest in painting and everything. But she hasn't gotten back with me, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't tell the person not to put five down. You know, I wouldn't do that. But, I mean, maybe you could say, you know. Hey,
no, I don't
hey,
worry. I wouldn't put $20,000 down.
Here's what I would say. If it was me on the phone with her, I would say, you know what? You know, we could get you, you know, by putting $20,000 down, that could really lower your payment quite a bit. But I'm going to see if I can work it out to where I can get your payment down so you don't have to use all $20,000. How would that be? Well, let's go out there and take a look at it. You go out there and look and let me know how you like it, and then let's see what we can do to work out something special for you. How about that?
Okay. Good.
Does that make sense? That's the way I would present it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. I hope that helped.
Yeah, it does, yes.
Good, good. Awesome.
Hey, Larry, this is Jeremy Greening. I have a quick question.
Okay.
At several of our recent Real Estate Investor Club meetings here in Nashville, a lot of people have been wanting to use terminology about lease with an option to purchase as opposed to recommending owner financing.
Right.
And specifically, they've mentioned that because of Dodd-Frank, that if you don't have a broker's license, that there could be some implications.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I've been doing my own research. We now have two properties that we've purchased using your system. These were actually going to wholesale, and then we're building up some seed money to move into some owner financing for cash flow.
Good for you.
But, you know, specifically my question is, two-part. One, do you ever see a scenario where it's advantageous to have a mortgage broker's license? It's a relatively inexpensive thing to obtain. And then two, you know, comparing lease options to true owner financing, what has your experience been? Because they're very similar, but there are some specific differences from what I've seen.
Well, first of all, you do not have to be a mortgage broker to be able to do seller finance transactions, even more than three in a 12-month period, okay? But if you do seller finance, whether it's a long-term lease option, like a 5 or 10-year lease option or longer, or you do a land contract or a mortgage or deed of trust, if you do more than three in a 12-month period of time and you're selling it to an owner-occupant, then you have to use what's called an RMLO or a mortgage broker to process that transaction. They take the credit app, and then they figure their debt ratio, and they're going to send out the TRID documents, Truth in Lending RESPA Integrated Disclosures, TRID documents.
Okay.
And then they're going to send out the LE along with that, the loan estimate, and in that package is what's called an intent to proceed. In other words, the consumer, the borrower, says, yes, I see the terms, I do want to proceed. And then when they sign that and get it back, then the lender can send out what's called the CD, the closing document. And then you can close 3 days after that. About the quickest you would ever be able to close if everything happens right up front and very fast. You know, in other words, you send it over to your mortgage broker. He gets the credit app that day. He gets the docs out that day. Then they have to wait until they get that LE. Then there's like 7 days, I believe, and then they send out the CD, and you got to wait another 3 days.
Another three.
About 9 days is as quick as you can close a deal.
Okay.
I don't think you can close one any quicker, okay, than 9 days. That's the quickest I've ever seen any of them done by anybody online, okay? And anyway, so, yeah, that's about as quick as you could do. So you don't have to have a mortgage broker's license. I don't recommend you get one, because then whether you're only using it for seller financing or whether you are active in the business doing loans as a mortgage broker for a fee, you're going to be subject to errors and omissions. You're going to be subject to, you know, annual CE, continuing education. You're going to have the banking commission that is going to come and audit you every so often.
So you're voluntarily putting yourself under another layer of oversight that
is not
obligatory.
Right. And there's no need to do that. In my opinion, by using a third-party RMLO, it's simply a transference of risk. It's simply a transference of risk. That's it. Okay?
Okay. That's helpful. So we, you know, we're in the process of building our power team. That is not somebody that we have identified yet.
Uh-huh.
You know, we're not at the scale where it's a requirement yet, but it is.
And you're in Tennessee, right?
We're in Tennessee.
Okay. I got a guy that's getting ready to get licensed in Tennessee.
Okay.
Quite frankly, he's about as good as you're going to find, but he's not great. Dave knows that. But he's about as good as you're going to find unless you can find a local mortgage broker that you know, like, and trust that you can just say, look, here's all I need. I need you to take the credit app and send me over something showing that they have the ability to pay. And whatever you have to do to make the banking commission happy on your end, you do that, but then just leave me out of it. I'll have everything I need.
I see.
He actually called me back, Larry.
Good.
And I got his assistance phone number and email, which makes it going to make it a lot easier to deal with him rather than waiting for him to call.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's very busy. He's running a small business, but he's he is actually he's licensed as an RMLO and a servicer in South Carolina, Florida, and Georgia. And he's licensed as an RMLO in North Carolina and also a servicer and an RMLO in Virginia, but he's going to soon be licensed in Tennessee, Jeremy.
Okay.
So his name is Billy Howard.
Billy Howard.
Yeah, he is with United Home Loan, and it's DBA Carolina something. What is it, Dave?
United... Hold on,
it's United Home Loan, but it's DBA Carolina.
Carolina Mortgage.
Carolina Mortgage.
Yeah, okay. But it's Billy Howard. If you Google United Home Loan Billy Howard, you'll see his information.
Okay.
Tell him I sent you. Not that you're going to get any preferential treatment, and I don't make anything off of it. It's just if he knows you know me, he'll know you know what you're doing, and he'll probably be a little easier with you in the sense of not trying to make you jump through so many hoops.
Okay, yeah, that's helpful. You know, as we're just preparing for as we build our business, I want to make sure that our Rolodex is expanding with all the functions we need.
Exactly. Now, I want to expand. I want to address the second question you mentioned about the lease options, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have mixed emotions about the lease options, okay? And it is something I'm going to be trying again. I'm just going to try it. I'm not getting away from seller financing. I'm just going to try it and see what the difference is and how it if it works better or worse. Okay?
Some people in our investment group meetings seem to be of the opinion that it was one way that you could always make sure you were not at risk of running afoul of any regulations.
Well, and that's true only let me first back up, okay? And let me kind of answer that question in a methodical order. What he's talking about is the difference between using an RMLO and a servicer and actually selling a property with a land contract or a mortgage or deed of trust versus putting a lease option tenant in there, okay? Now, I will tell you this. If you set up your lease option for a long term, and my guess of long term is going to be anywhere from like 5 years or longer, okay? Or if you're buying like a really dirt cheap house, like I bought a single wide in a park the other week for $1,500. And, you know, and say you sell that for $7,500 and you get $1,000 down, they can have it paid for in a few years. So if I did a lease option on that, then if I did a lease option on that, then it could be construed as a seller finance transaction, especially if at the end of the lease option they can buy it for a dollar. Does that make sense? So
yes.
If you structure your lease option like a seller finance transaction, then it will not negate having an RMLO. However, here's what I am going to try, and I will keep people abreast of what's going on and how it works, is here's what I've been thinking about doing. Listen, I love seller financing. I love it. I teach it. That's what I do. I love it. There's two things about it I hate, RMLOs and servicers. That's the two things I hate about it, okay? Really, it is. And those two things I cannot control. I don't have any control over them, okay? So having said that, I am going to try. I'm going to try this model and kind of see how it works. Is I'm going to try to take a couple of deals, and instead of selling them with seller financing, I'm going to do a short-term lease option. I'm going to do like an 18-month or two-year lease option, probably a two-year lease option. And I'm going to do a lease option, and I'm going to get the same amount down. I'll get, like, say I get $5,000 down, but then I'm going to have a lease. Like, say if their mortgage payment would have been $600 plus taxes and insurance, it'll be $750. I'm going to charge them $750 or $800 rent, and I'm going to pay the taxes and insurance for the first couple years.
Right, makes sense. You're collecting the same amount, but it's just everything remains in your name at that point.
Right. But then I am the landlord. I am servicing it, and in my lease option, I'm going to say, I'll take care of everything major. You take care of everything minor. Like, they take care of everything $1,000 or less, I'll take care of everything over that, okay? So, but I'm going to do it for like 2 years. And then I'm going to tell them at the end of 2 years, as long as you've got a good pay history, we should be able to convert you to a seller finance transaction. I can't promise you, I can't guarantee it, but if you make your payments on time and you keep the property up, then there's a good possibility we can convert you over to a seller finance transaction. Now, what does this do? It does a couple of things. It's a short-term deal, so it should, I'm no attorney, but it should negate having to deal with an RMLO. Now they're a tenant, so I don't need a servicer. And at the end of the 2 years, Dodd-Frank will, I don't know if you guys know this or not, and I'm not saying I'm for or against any politician, I'm just telling you, did you guys know that if Trump gets elected, he wants to abolish the CFPB, and that is who regulates Dodd-Frank. That's who oversees Dodd-Frank is the CFPB, Consumer Finance Protection Bureau.
Dodd-Frank.
Whether you like him or not, go vote for him. If nothing
yes.
else, just for Dodd-Frank.
I'm not sure that's a good enough reason.
I hear you. I heard that. Okay, so anyway, but there is an amendment. There's a Dodd-Frank amendment. It's called H.R. 5301, okay? And it has been introduced to Congress, and it has bipartisan support. And it is to amend Dodd-Frank to allow 24 seller finance transactions a year without complying with Dodd-Frank. And they have a year to review it. So it's going to be about a year. It's going to be about a year until we will know if it gets passed. And I don't see any reason that it wouldn't, because there is bipartisan support. So if it's not abolished altogether, within a year or so, you'll be able to do up to 24 deals. So if you do a two-year lease option, by the time you get to the point of their two-year lease option being up, you'll know, number one, have they failed out? Have you had to evict them? Or have they paid on time? If they've paid on time, then you could easily convert them to a land contract deal. Does that make sense?
So I have a question. This is Meg from Charlotte.
Hey, Meg.
And what you've described is that you're setting them up with a lease, and you're telling them that if they are good tenants, whatever, they might be able to convert to seller finance purchase. What is the contract that you're drawing with them? Because you could draw it as a regular lease option and then they don't qualify, or you could draw it as a regular lease option and they could get financing from somebody else.
That's true.
Are you actually putting something in place?
And listen, I have run this by several attorneys, okay? And the word I've gotten is they said, I would avoid putting anything in writing that says if you stay there for 2 years, we'll convert you to a lease option, or not lease option, a land contract. However, instead of that, I would say, let me tell you what we've done for some of our previous customers. If you stay there for 2 years, we may be able to convert you to a land contract. I can't guarantee it. I can't make you a promise, but I do know if you make your payments on time, there's a good chance that we will.
But the actual documents that you draw up with them is just a lease option without mentioning seller financing.
Right. It's two documents, a lease and an option, two separate agreements, a lease and an option.
So the option is your down payment.
Is your down payment money, which, by the way, the option is not taxable until one of two things happens, until they exercise that option or until they default. So
okay.
If you do a two-year, it could be you defer that option money for 2 years as long as they stay there. But here's the – in my opinion – there's two great things about this, and I'm going to try it. I'm not recommending and telling people go out and abandon seller financing and start doing lease options. I'm not doing that, but I'm going to try it myself, okay? Then I can report back. It might take a while, but, you know. Anyway, in my opinion, there's two advantages. The first advantage is no RMLO or servicer. The second advantage is if a person is going to fail out, if they're going to default, they're typically going to default within the first 12 to 24 months, which eliminates having to get the property back or foreclose or get them to sign a cancellation agreement or whatever to be able to cancel that land contract. So it does two things. It eliminates the RMLO and servicer and allows them – and listen, I'm going to tell them, hey, look, I tried to get you approved for seller financing. I couldn't do it, but here's what we can do. We could do a lease option with you, and let's see how you pay for a while. You know, we call it a homeowner in training program. And that's what I'm going to tell them, and that's what I'm going to try on a few of them, and I'm going to see how it goes. And if it goes well, then I'll start telling people, you know, set them up as a homeowner in training for the first 2 years, and then move them over to a land contract if you want to.
It does seem like an interesting tactic, especially as we've listed these properties and begun taking inquiries. We get a lot of phone calls from people who seem to only be able to come up with $1,000 to $2,000 down. And to me, that's a big red flag when it comes to being willing to finance the purchase of the property.
Well, it depends on what price range property you're talking about.
We're talking like 60 to 70.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't take – the only time I would take $1,000 or $2,000 down is if I paid $5,000 or $10,000 for the house,
mm-hmm.
and I'm selling it for, you know, $30,000.
Yeah,
that's
how Heidi and I feel too. So looking at the lease option as a possible means to get those people into something, but
right.
lowering the risk on both sides, like you said.
That's exactly right. Now, there is a third benefit as well, and I'll tell you what that is. It's there's more people understand buying it for the people. Let me back up. For the people who are selling the note, okay? Like if I bought a house for 30, I sold it for 69.9 and I got $5,000 down, now I have a 64.9 note. There's more people understand buying a house for $50,000 with a lease option tenant in it than they understand buying a note, a $64,000 note for $50,000. So what are you telling me at the end of 20 years my money runs out? I'm not buying a property? See, some people have that mentality. So you got to sell notes to note buyers or find people who like cash flow but understand you're not buying a property, you're buying a note. So there's more people. All I'm saying is there's more people understand the buying a house than understand notes. And it can be an easier sell to sell. That's my guess. It could be an easier sell to sell a property with a lease option tenant in it than it could be selling a note on a property with a land contract buyer in it. So that's something I'm gonna test the waters and see how it goes, and I'll report back and let you guys let you guys know how it goes. And if you guys want to try it, please report back and let us know, you know, how it goes as well. But it is something I'm going to try. I'm not abandoning ship. I'm not changing. You know, it's something I want to try because I'm a firm believer that you've got to have a fire alarm. When things go, when the markets change, when the markets tighten up or loosen up or, you know, there's a lot more people coming in the market or it's harder to get deals, you got to figure out a way around stuff. And or like whenever the regulators come in and talk about, you know, Dodd-Frank and stuff like that. It used to be the SAFE Act, and now it's Dodd-Frank, you know. So you got to look at different ways to do deals and trial and error, and that's kind of what I'm doing. So I want to be able to report back and let people know how it goes.
So I have a property that I think would be a good fit for this strategy. We're negotiating somewhere between 18 and 20,000 for the purchase, and I have a buyer who wants it. But I would rather lease option it to them than to sell it to them at this point.
Uh-huh.
But I was thinking that in the process of doing the lease option, I would need to tell them what they're going to be able to buy the house for. So I'm going to get it for something around 20, maybe a little less, and they're not going to buy it for a year. So I figure if they put a few thousand down and they pay several hundred a month, that a year from now I'd be perfectly happy to sell it to them for $50,000. So I want to put that in writing, but of course the house isn't worth $50,000 unless they actually work on it.
Right.
But
yeah.
You know, the comps in the neighborhood when they're fixed up and things are nice are in the 90s and a little over 100. So I think it's a fair deal for them.
Yeah, and what would you rent it for or do the lease option amount for?
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure it out. I was thinking I would rent it to them for $700 a month and that I would sell it to them for $50,000. They would, because their story is that they're going to qualify for VA financing.
Well, if they're going to qualify for VA financing, I want you to think about this, Meg. You need to raise the price on them. And here's why. Because first of all, what lender is going to make a loan below $50,000? So you're going to, if their comps are 90 and 100, even if it needs a little bit of work, you should raise the price to at least 59.9 or 69.9. And then you know with VA, the seller pays all closing costs. They can get 100% financing, but the seller pays all closing costs. So that's another
okay.
reason you want to raise the price.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I would do. Make sense?
Yep.
Good. That's a good analogy, though. That's good. Where is this house at? Is it a double wide?
It's a double wide. It's on an acre and a half. It's close to Jacksonville, North Carolina.
Oh, okay, good, good.
Hey, Larry, can I run a deal by you?
Sure, sure. Let me first make a question, or first just check right quick. When I very first started, and I said, who's first? There was a guy and a girl started. Meg, was that you, or was there somebody else that wanted to jump in?
No, that was me, Larry. This
okay,
is Janet.
Good. I didn't want you to think I forgot about you.
No, I'm still here.
Good. Well, let's you go first, and then
okay.
The other gentleman that just spoke up, he could go next, okay?
Okay. All right. I'm interested in two fourplexes owned by the same bank. However, they want to use their own purchase agreement, which is 23 pages long and is, of course, very slanted in favor of the seller.
That's normal.
However,
when you're buying bank-owned properties, you typically have to use either their agreement or their addendums, the realtor's agreement and their addendums. That's normal.
Okay. That was what I was going to ask you, if I had any alternatives.
But let me ask you a
question.
You said fourplexes or duplexes?
Fourplexes.
Fourplexes? Why are you buying fourplexes? What do you plan to do with them?
Well, if I can't sell them, I'm going to keep them because I can buy fourplexes for the same price that I can buy single families.
Okay. So you have financing available for those for yourself if you're going to keep them?
No, I'd have to get private funding or some such.
Okay. Do you have access to private funding? Do you have that lined up?
I have a list of people.
Okay.
I haven't done business with them yet, though.
Okay. All right. Well, you want to get all that stuff lined up so you're not trying to scramble around and get some money after you get a deal.
Okay.
You want to
some of the calls that I've made, they don't want to make any commitments until I have something in my pocket.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Several of the ones that I have called don't want to make any commitment until I have something in my pocket or if I have skin in the game.
Right.
But I have nine others that I can contact and see if what their criteria is.
Good.
And the second question I have in this document, there were three terms that I did recognize. One was a lender's policy. The second was a technology fee, and the third was a buyer's premium to HUBZA. Can you explain those?
First of all, the buyer's premium. The buyer's premium is just a commission over and above what the purchase price is agreed to. Like, for example, if it says there's a $2,000 buyer's premium, if your bid was $50,000, then you're going to pay $52,000.
Okay.
It's a premium that the buyer pays over and above the purchase price. And what was the other question?
Lender's policy.
Uh-huh. The lender's policy, that's a title insurance policy, okay? That's a title insurance policy that the lender gets, and sometimes they make you pay for it. Are they making you pay for it on this, on HUBZU?
Yeah.
Okay. And the technology fee is just all the technology fee is it's just a junk fee. It's basically for them putting the property on the website. It's just a fancy word for a junk fee. It's like when you go to get a mortgage and they charge you, you know, doc prep, you know, underwriting fee, processing fee, doc prep fee. Those are junk fees.
Uh-huh.
That's what a technology fee is. It's just a way they can grind a few more dollars out of you.
Yeah.
Basically, really.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I'm sorry I didn't acknowledge your question. I just saw it submitted here just now. I had about a about 100 emails that, and I was looking through them here while we were on the phone, and I see your question come through, so I'm glad you were able to get in and ask it, since I didn't acknowledge it to begin with.
Well, no problem.
Okay.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, who was going to have ask a question a minute ago?
That's me, Jeff from Connecticut.
What's up?
Well, Larry, I have a HUD deal that I own. We bought it at the beginning of last month. It's a three-bedroom bungalow up in the Catskills. We own it for $11,000, including closing costs. And I have it on the market for the after-repaired value, which is $79,000.
Uh-huh.
And marketing it with discounts for repairing the property or work for equity. So I have we've been marketing it, and a lot of people go over there and throw up on it, and then you get some handymen who see the diamond in the rough. So looks like this. I'm doing it on a lease option, I think, and it looks like I have a guy who's a building inspector and teaches courses at the local. We have a thing in New York called BOCES. It's tech schools, right? You learn carpentry and plumbing and stuff. So he wants to buy it for his dad, so I'm meeting him there tomorrow night. He's maybe got.
You're starting to cut out on me. I can barely hear you anymore.
Okay. What did you hear?
I heard up until just something about a building inspector.
Yeah, I have a prospect tomorrow night coming. He's a building inspector. And he teaches carpentry at a technical school.
Oh, good. He'll be a good person to have in your pocket.
And probably has $2,000 to put down on the lease option fee.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to negotiate what the discount is, you know, the scope
okay.
of work. I told him we only pay for materials. We don't pay for P&O. And so on. So, the plan is to get him, his dad, who's on a pension, qualified for a new mortgage in 6 to 12 months and get taken out maybe at 40 or 50 grand.
Good. That'd be sweet.
You know, I have a partnership in a credit repair company that's killer at getting credit repaired.
Good.
In a relationship with somebody. I'm testing a mortgage company. A bank out of Michigan that's licensed
right.
in all 50 states that's willing to work with these hairy deals.
Uh-huh.
So I put under contract before I came to you. So just trying to work my way out of it.
Okay, so a couple of things. Did you have any specific question, or are you just asking for my opinion?
Yeah, is there a question? I want suggestions. You know, how you would market it. If this doesn't go through, you know, maybe.
Well, you said you've already closed on it, right?
Oh, yeah, we own it, yeah.
Yeah, I would put not only a banner on the house, but I'd put out about 20 signs around the neighborhood and on that side of town that say
right.
owner financing with your number. And
yeah,
I would put it on Craigslist. I would put
yard.
It on Zillow. I would make sure that all your ads had owner financing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the keywords, why rent when you can own, owner financing, your
right.
down payments, your credit, that sort of thing. And my other question to you, though, is, and I'm kind of digressing back to the whole lease option thing versus seller financing, but if there's a downside to the lease option, it is that in order to lease a house to somebody, according to most states' landlord-tenant laws, it has to be fit and habitable and safe. So you can't lease a house to somebody with holes in the floor or that the roof leaks or that the heat and air doesn't work. You know, it's got to be – there's nothing that says in landlord-tenant laws that I can find that says it's got to have new carpet, new paint on the walls – all that sort of thing, but it's got to be fit and habitable.
Got to be habitable.
So
right.
my question to you would be, is this property habitable? In other words, if that building inspector came out because a tenant called and said, hey, my landlord won't fix the heat or the air conditioner
right.
or whatever, or I got electrical
oh,
problems and my landlord won't fix it. So you got to be careful about that and make sure that it's something that is going to be habitable to be able to lease.
Not habitable. Or maybe
then I would not do a lease option on it. I wouldn't do a lease option on it. I wouldn't do a lease option on it. I would do a land contract on it. Unless, here's a way that I just thought of. You might be able to do a lease option, but you'll need to talk to your attorney about this. You could do a lease option, but you could say, well, I don't know if this will work or not, but you could put in there that the tenant that you're lease optioning it to is not allowed to move into it until it is, you know,
right.
safe and habitable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
We have an independent contractor's agreement for the purchaser or whoever's going to fix it up to execute. So, so they can't come back and complain to the code enforcement.
Right.
Supposedly.
Yeah, just be careful with doing a lease option on some of these deals. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that almost sounds like you'd have to have an inspection done on the property and come to an agreement with the eventual buyer or lease option or whatever, the tenant, as to what constitutes the habitable and what you're going to pay to have done.
Well,
I don't think
habitable is a relative term. I think habitable means, you know, as a landlord, the city wants you to provide fit and safe housing. So, you know, could you, in other words, is it required to have fresh paint? No. Is it required to have a countertop that doesn't have a scratch in it or doesn't maybe have an edge band pulled off or something? No. But do all the outlets have to work? Does all the plumbing have to work? Does the roof have to be free of leaks? You see what I'm saying, the difference is?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
It's something that a building inspector would look and say, no, you can't live here like this. This is not safe and habitable. Make
right,
sense?
That's what I'm saying, that when you execute your lease option and you're saying, I'm going to let you have the house, well, there's work that needs to be done, and here's the work that I'm going to do that's going to make it compliant, whatever. I'll do the air thing. I'll get the roof fixed.
I just would not do a lease option as opposed to a seller finance deal on a house that needed work to make it habitable. In other words, I wouldn't do it on a filthy rich's house that I paid $5,000 or $10,000 that might need some wiring or plumbing or roofing or HVAC, you know, items fixed. I wouldn't do it with that. But would I sell a double wide that, you know, needs paint and carpet? Absolutely.
A lot of the double wides, as we're able to get a hold of them, have something missing. There's no air conditioning or the refrigerator's gone or the water heater is missing or
right.
something. So do you fix it or do you let them fix it? And could you let them fix it? If they were on a lease option.
HVAC and water heater, you would have to fix that. A refrigerator, there's many people lease houses all the time without a refrigerator. They got to bring their own fridge.
So if the only real problem with the house is the water heater, then you either fix it or you don't lease option it.
Right.
Okay.
But let me tell you something. Whenever, especially on like the double wides, the higher priced houses, I tell people anyway, look, it's going to be move-in ready. If I'm selling a house to somebody for $70,000 and they're going to pay me $600 or $700 or $800 rent or payment, it's going to be livable. If there's anything that needs to be done, it's cosmetic. It's paint and carpet or countertops or something like that or landscaping. It's not going to be I mean, I tell people you can move in. And I do. If there's anything that needs to be done, like a heat pump or a water heater, I fix that before I sell it to them. Now, on a Filthy Rich's house, it's a different story. If I'm paying $5,000 for it and I'm selling it for $30,000 and they're putting a couple grand down and they're going to fix it up and rent it out or fix it up and live in it, I'm not doing anything. I'm not touching it. Look, you're putting $2,000 down. No bank qualifying. Your payment's $400 a month. What do you want? You know, I'm helping you out. I'm helping you become a homeowner. For $2,000 down, where else can you buy a house for $2,000 down? You can't do that. So they're going to use some sweat equity, and they're going to put the heat pump or the water heater or fix the electrical or whatever. Yeah. Does that make sense? Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
Good. Thought I was talking to myself
there
for a minute.
Well,
it
it's just I've been looking for inventory now for a number of months, and I don't feel like I see anything available for sale that's actually moving ready.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I see stuff every day that is. Every day.
Larry, what kind of price points are you seeing today for things that you consider move-in ready, especially if you contrast that to the Filthy Rich's model?
Well, I'll tell you this. We just picked up a house in Georgia that we picked it up for $21,000, and not only is it move-in ready, it's got stainless appliances. You should go right now to neighborhoodhousinggroup.org and look up the house in Albany, Georgia. And I picked it up for $21,000, and we have it on the website for $59,900. But I already, I've had a lot of people that have said, hey, I don't have time to make offers, sell me a house. So I think I sold it for $30,000 to an investor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, we got it on our website for $59,900 with owner financing. And we're paying $21,000. Go look at it. neighborhoodhousinggroup.org. Click on the blue button on the right hand side that says search for properties and scroll down. It's like probably the third or fifth or something like that down. Albany, Georgia.
Larry, can you read the link?
Neighborhood.
Yeah, it's the first one, Larry.
Housinggroup.org. It's the first property?
Yep.
Doesn't it have stainless appliances?
3049 Tiger Court.
There you go, Tiger Court. That's a HUD house. We paid $21,000 for it in Albany, Georgia.
Hey, Larry. Steve Barclay. How you doing?
What's up, buddy? I'm glad you made it on. You lost the number, huh?
Yes, I did. Did you get my email?
Well, apparently I did because I responded, and now you're on here.
Oh, okay, yeah. I finally found it. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I responded to you. I responded right back while we're on the call.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't even looking. I was so busy looking for the number, you know. I'm like, oh, there it is.
That's okay. I got you covered. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question for you. I purchased a house, roughly 44 all in, and this house just really needs paint, and it needs. I've probably spent $1,000, you know, buying like a towel rack and different things for the bathrooms, and maybe not even $1,000. But say I'm 46.5 all in with appliances. Now I heard you talking to someone, and you said don't worry about the refrigerator. I'm gonna seller finance this house for $99,900. I mean, this is a really nice looking double wide, 2,050 square feet, four bedroom, 2.5 bath, and I was gonna sell it for $99,900.
That's great. Those are good numbers.
Yeah. I guess my question is, would you put a refrigerator in that one?
At $100,000, probably so.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Because I had planned to put a refrigerator and a range in it, and then I heard you talking to somebody that said, don't worry about the refrigerator because people bring their own.
Well, the reason we talked about that is we were talking about lease options versus seller financing and talking about offering fit and habitable housing versus an amenity. And a refrigerator is an amenity. A water heater is not.
Oh, okay. Got you. Actually, I'm going to keep this note on this house.
Good.
And I was wondering, who is a third party that you use to get the – I haven't even put a sign out, and I've had 8 people stop already.
I love it, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Who is the third party that you get these people qualified through?
Billy Howard at United Home Loan. I can't remember their website or whatever, but just Google Billy Howard, United Home Loan Services, and it'll pop up, and then just call them and tell them I sent you. And but let me ask you now, is this your first or second or third?
This is actually, I guess this is the first one. I've been doing looking at auctions and making purchases on auctions, and I'm gonna tell you what, I've come to find out that every title is bad through the auction companies. I had another. This one was in Shelby, and I had another one. I think it was right down the road from your house, actually. And I had another one in Shelby that I purchased, or at least won the bid on, signed all the things, put my earnest money up. A month and a half later, they still have not signed the contract. And so I'm like, I'm not waiting, because it's tying up. This one wasn't going to be a seller finance deal. This one was more or less just the house was in good shape, and I was just going to pick it up, make, you know, 15 grand off of it, and put it right back on the market.
Right.
But a month and a half later, they still haven't signed the contract, so I canceled the contract the other day. I just sort of got, you know, it's tying up 70 grand of my money.
Yeah,
so
just one aside there. This is Jeremy Greening. I can empathize. We bought a double wide through an auction, and we ended up having a terrible time getting the title for it. But the lesson I learned was how crucial it is for us as the buyers to have a really solid title company representing us at closing,
right,
that does their due diligence, because they did red flag it and we were able to get around it and it was my choice to proceed. But it does seem to be a big risk with auction properties, and also, like another caller mentioned earlier, the fact that you have to abide by their contracts, which are heavily weighted in their favor.
True.
Yep.
So it's not giving you the ability to reassign the contract if you wanted to sell it to another investor.
Jeremy, which auction site was yours on?
Ours was through Exome.
Exome? What about yours, Steve?
Auction.com and Home Search.
Okay. Well, Home Search and Zome are the same, but Auction.com is different. I've found Home Search to be a little better to work with, but auction.com can be brutal. But let me address the issue about the mobile home title, okay? I do want to address that issue. When you're buying a mobile home with land on a permanent foundation, a title search will reveal whether or not that title, because mobile homes have a title just like a car. And
right, they're actually registered, like going to your Department of Motor Vehicles.
Yeah,
that
DMV,
was something that
just
I was,
like a car. So the thing about a mobile home is, like, for example, if you buy a mobile home from HUD, the title has already been surrendered. It was surrendered before FHA made that loan. If you're buying a mobile home from an individual bank or an individual or on auction, the title may or may not have been surrendered. The only way to find out is to do a title search, and the attorney or title company representing you will tell you that. Now, you can get the title surrendered, but it takes a little bit of time and a little bit of money. And we had to do one not too long ago where we bought the house, and the attorney told us that the title had not been surrendered, and they took care of all that. but it takes a little bit of time. It costs just a little bit of money, not much money, but it took a little bit of money. But anyway, that's something you want to be aware of. Anytime you buy a double-wide mobile home on land or even a single-wide mobile home on land, you want to make sure that the title has been surrendered and it's titled as real property, not a mobile home on a lot. So that's something you need to be aware of. If it's a HUD house, it's irrelevant because you can rest assured that the title has already been surrendered, or FHA would never have made the loan anyway.
Yeah, on this particular house, I mean, it took me 2.5 months to make this purchase on this one because it had an IRS redemption period on it, and I had to wait that out before they, you know, could do anything with it. And, I almost gave it up, but it was such a nice mobile home. I'm like, all right, I'm going to wait this one out. And finally, it did come through. And also, whoever that was speaking, yes, their contracts are very one-sided. There's nothing that you can put in that contract that says if the title is not good within 30 days, you know, we can cancel or anything like that. And, they're very one-sided.
Right. That's so true. That's the way they are.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, I think it was auction.com where I purchased the other property. And, you know, you don't pay any attorney fees if you use their attorney. And that's what I did. And won't do that again.
Yeah, I remember back when HUD had their own attorneys. We paid extra to have our own attorney deal with their attorney because HUD pays so little that they couldn't hire attorneys that could hire competent enough staff, so we had to have our own attorney and pay them extra to deal with HUD's attorney.
It was the same with Exome. We did elect to use our own title company, and I'm glad we did because they were the one who caught the title issues that we fortunately were able to work through, but it was conceding some of the fee reductions that we would have enjoyed had we gone with theirs, but I don't have good feelings about that. You already see how one side of the contracts are. I can only imagine if you're only dealing with their closing agent.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to throw this in. Huntable Law Firm, do not deal with them. Those were the ones I called, I emailed, never got a response, hardly ever.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, it was very, very frustrating.
Was it
their
attorney?
That was the one that they were doing the closing through, yes.
Yeah, okay. Wow. Well, thanks for that tip. Okay, who's next?
I have a question for you.
Sure.
So we're just starting out. I think we're about 2 weeks or so in. We're looking to buy in another state, and we were advised to get a certificate of authority to buy in the state that we want.
Right.
And the only two documents that I could pull up to get a certificate of authority is you have to have an entity that's a limited partnership or a limited liability limited partnership.
What
entity.
State are you looking to buy in?
Alabama.
Alabama?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we only have an LLC. Would I have to create another entity to purchase in that state?
No, not at all. Not at all. What you need to do is go to the sos.alabama.gov and, you know, you're going to look for the forms, and it's not an authority to buy houses there. It's what's called Certificate of Authority to Transact Business.
And those are the two that I have pulled up. That's their purpose is for.
That's their what?
That's what they say their purpose is for, is to do transact business in Alabama. So the only two certificates that they have is for an LP or LLLP.
Huh.
Yeah, it's weird. I looked all in that state, the Secretary of, you know, Alabama.
Well, maybe what you need, now what do you have, an LLC?
Yes, we do.
Then what you need probably is you go down where it says business entities, click on LLC, and you're probably going to file a foreign filing. Because domestic is like if your entity or your LLC was formed in Alabama, then that's your registration of domicile. That's where you reside. But a foreign company, okay, a foreign limited liability company is one that's registered in another state, but you're going to do business there. And it's under, if you click on business entities, scroll down to LLC and click on that, and on the right-hand side it's going to say foreign filing. But before I did that, I would call them up and ask them if that's what you need.
Okay, good idea.
Good. But I would definitely call them and ask them.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Okay. Larry, this is Gary in Asheville.
Hey, Gary, what's up?
What was the HR number on that Dodd-Frank amendment?
HR 5301, I believe.
Great. Okay, I'll check it out. I'll see what I can. Also, I wanted to add a little bit to the lease option conversation and also to the mortgage broker license information as well. On mortgage broker licenses, I called the Department of State in North Carolina where I live, and they won't let you be an RMLO in North Carolina unless you've worked 3 years for a bank or a lender.
Well, you don't want to be an RMLO anyway.
No, I don't. You're exactly right. But somebody was talking about that before.
Right. No, what you want to do is you want to use somebody that's already licensed.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, right. And then as far as lease options, North Carolina is kind of a strange state, too, because in North Carolina, if you have a vested interest, and the courts have decided that if you have a vested interest, which can include a down payment or extra money that goes toward a down payment, that they become an equitable interest, which means you have to foreclose on them rather than evict them.
Okay.
Yeah, North Carolina. Yeah.
My response is going to be, it depends.
Okay.
It depends. If they fight you and it goes to a court of law, a judge may determine that you need to foreclose.
That's true.
If they default and they move out, who's going to ever know the difference?
That's true, too. Yeah.
I'm not saying you're doing anything wrong.
No.
The only time that you would ever possibly have to foreclose would be if they fight you and you can't get them out, and then it goes to a court of law.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And then my understanding also in North Carolina is that any money you take as a deposit on a lease option in North Carolina has to go into a trust fund and can't be touched until you consummate the deal.
Yeah, that it depends on who's servicing or whatever, or who's managing and how you handle that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also in North Carolina, I don't know if you're aware of this, but all lease options are supposed to be recorded.
Recorded? Oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In North Carolina, lease options are supposed to be recorded.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah, you're supposed to record a document that shows that there is a lease option on this property, and it's a separate document.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a separate document.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a tough commission in North Carolina,
now,
a real estate commission, huh?
So that does help a lot. So my next question is about Fannie Mae houses. I understand this might be fairly new. There's a 90-day no transfer requirement on Fannie Mae properties, and also a segment that says you can't sell the property for more than 120% that you paid for it.
Yeah, within 90 days.
Well, within 90 days, okay. Right. Now, does that apply to a land contract? I understand that if you do a land contract and you don't record it, then you can get around that.
I think it would depend on... You know, I think if anything ever came up and they were to find out about it, then it could be they could challenge you that a land contract is a form of seller financing, and thus you are selling the property for more than 120% of what you paid for it within 90 days if you did it within 90 days. But, you know, there again, you could do a six-month lease option and then convert it to a land contract after 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. And if I were rehabbing, I'd probably be at least 90 days before I was living in rehab anyway.
Yeah, exactly. If you're gonna do a fix and flip, it's probably going to be 90 days between the rehab and putting it on the market and finding a buyer and closing on that sell side. It's going to be 90 days anyway, so it's going to be irrelevant. Yeah, but that's one of the reasons I don't like Fannie Mae. But in doing a land contract, the deed stays in your name, so the deed is not transferred anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't record the land contract for 90 days, then you should be okay anyway.
Yeah.
Or if you're in a state where you do not record land contracts, like North Carolina also requires land contracts to be recorded.
Okay.
South Carolina does not.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, okay. And then I have a deal going that I wanted to run by you very quickly.
Sure.
I found a three-bedroom, two-bath mobile home in Zirconia, which is kind of an upscale area on a lake for the most part. But this is a couple miles away from the lake. And it was originally listed at $35,900. I went out and looked at the home, and there's a bunch of work that needs to be. I'm guessing there might be $50,000 worth of work that needs to go into that mobile home, including grading and putting roadblock down on a driveway. But I came back after seeing it, and I told the listener that the most I could offer for it would be $25,000 because I wanted to get it under contract.
Right.
So I'm getting it under contract right now. They're supposed to be. They already said they'll sign it. They're going to be sending it back to me tomorrow, and then I'm going to. What I've also done, I've set up agreements with rehabbers, contractors who do my inspections for me. So during that 15-day due diligence period, I have them go out and do the inspections from a rehabber's point of view. They give me an estimate of what they think the house is going to cost to repair. And then I give them first shot at buying the house on the other end. So I'm building in a buyer as well.
Good. That's good.
And, yeah. And then, so I'm planning on when it comes back, because I think it's going to be, I'm probably going to drop it back down to about 21 when it comes back and give it to them at that point. It'll be a little painful for them, but I think for $4,000, rather than keeping it on the market, they'll probably do it. But then the house, after rehab value is $137,000. And even doing that, buying the property for $25,000, putting $50,000 in it, I still can make, even if I were to rehab it, I'd make somewhere between $44,000 and $50,000 myself.
So it's a double-wide mobile home.
Yes.
And the ARV is $137,000.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And where is this?
It's in Zirconia. It's kind of an upscale retirement community.
In North Carolina?
North Carolina, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would just ask, before I would commit to doing that,
mm-hmm.
I would ask multiple realtors if you could really sell this house. And here's
okay.
My other concern. What year is it?
1987.
Okay. That's another big concern.
Mm-hmm.
It's 1987, 97, 07, 17. It's almost 30 years old.
Right.
I don't buy any double wides unless I'm buying like a single wide in a park or something. But I don't buy any double wides older than the late 90s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It being in the 80s, that concerns me. Here's the other thing. And the reason I asked what year it was is it's hard to find a double wide, like I buy, that needs much more than paint and carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, if this needs $50,000 in work, then it must be pretty old.
Yeah, it's pretty
and
bad.
Also, the older ones don't have as big a square footage either. What is it, like 1,200 to 1,400 square feet?
No, this is
1,568. 1,568? No, 3-2,
yeah.
Okay. Well, see, most of them now are like go on my website again and look. There's a house over in Rayford.
Mm-hmm.
Go to neighborhoodhousinggroup.org.
Yeah.
I got a house over in Rayford that I'm in this house for. I think I'm in it for 35 maybe. It's over 2,000 square feet.
Uh-huh.
It's a 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath. It's move-in ready. The only thing in the world this house needs is paint, is carpet in one room where the fire.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I could sell this house. I think I got it on the market right now for $85,000.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, what if I go put carpet in it and have a local realtor list it for $79,900 and have people go get their own money?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could do that. I could sell it for $85,000 and get $5,000 or $10,000 down, or I could just have a local realtor list it for, say, $79,900 and have somebody go get their own loan, get
and
an
cash
FHA
out.
Loan,
yeah.
Or
mm-hmm.
get a bank loan or a credit union loan or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in it at about, I think I'm in it at about 35, thir, no, thir, 34, I think is what I'm in it.
So,
I mean, I could wholesale it out to an investor for 50. They could throw some carpet in it. And now one room of carpet, what's one room of carpet going to cost? Less than $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So say they have 50 in it. They have 51 in it. You could put it on the market for $79,900, and, you know, and that's a gross of $30,000.
Yeah.
It's a deal right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a deal for me. I made 20 on it, and somebody else is going to make, you know,
mm-hmm.
20 after they sell it, after all the closing costs and everything.
So since this is an 87, would it make more sense for me just to flip it?
What do you mean by flip it?
Either assign it while it's under contract, or sell it to a rehabber for, you know, $10,000.
Are you buying it through a realtor?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, then your contract is probably not assignable. You're going to have to do a double closing.
I've been taking and crossing out paragraph 16 in the state contracts and having the buyer and me sell those. And I always sell it, I always put my LLC or its assigns as a seller.
Right. And as the buyer.
As the buyer. Yeah.
And they're okay with that.
I haven't had anybody come back and say no.
Good. Sometimes you can slide that stuff through. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So
yeah, and he may won't allow that.
So what I would do is, you're just getting the contract signed now, so I would go ahead and start marketing it. In my opinion,
yep.
I would talk to a few realtors, because, you know, who knows? I could be wrong. I could be totally wrong. You could possibly go out and get $137,000 for it, and it could sell very fast. But to me, a $50,000 rehab is a huge undertaking.
It is. That's why I don't want to do it.
I would not want to manage a $50,000 rehab.
No, I don't really either. And that's why I'm really more seriously thinking about just wholesaling it out.
Right. Good. Well, I hope that helped.
Yeah, it did, very much so. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Who's got a question?
Hey, Larry, this is Steve again. I have a question. On that particular house I was telling you about, 99.9, your low credit score is what, 530? Someone that has a credit score of less than 530, you kind of don't even look at them?
Well, it depends. I mean, I financed somebody the other week that had a 3-something. But they had a lot of money to put down.
Well, that was going
to
be my question. What would be your minimum down payment? Say with maybe a 580.
Well, it depends. You know, a 580 score, a 580. Listen, there's some lenders out there that will make a traditional loan with a 580 score.
One of the dudes that stopped, I told you there was 8 people that stopped by. One of the guys I was talking to said he had $3,000 and he was getting some sort of a settlement from a wreck that he expected. So it was like $13,000 down, but he had a 530 credit score or something.
Right. Well, you're in the house for 44, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay. So if you get 13 down, Now you're in it for 31. So I would say it would also depend on how much they can handle per month. Because you're in it for 31, I wouldn't want my payment to be $600 or $700. I'd want to be able to get the payment up to close to $1,000. You know, find out what they can handle. What's your income? What's your debt ratio? How much can you handle?
Yeah, that was kind of where the problem was, because he was paying $700 or $750, I think it was. And he said, yeah, and sometimes we struggle, which, you know, big red flag came up when he said that. And but I was thinking, you know, $13,000 down. You know what I mean?
That's pretty strong. But here's the other thing you got to be aware of, okay? If he's got $13,000, but only $3,000 of it is his money, then he's really only got $3,000 invested in his mind. So my point is it's not that solid of a buyer. It's good for you to get $13,000 down, but they're not that solid of a buyer. They might,
yeah.
They're not going to be too shy about walking away from it.
Right, right.
It wasn't their money anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I see what you're saying now. So, I mean, like on a somebody with a decent score, 550, I mean, still on a bottom down payment, what would you go, 5, 7% maybe?
Down payment as much as you can. Yeah. On your house, you're selling it for $100,000, I would try to get at least $10,000 down.
Okay, that's kind of what my thoughts are.
I'm trying to get at least $10,000 down on everything I have.
Okay.
Do I always get it? No. But I try.
Right, right. And that's kind of, you know, with these people that I spoke with, that's kind of, you know, because every one of them had low credit scores. And so I kind of said, well, you know, when you got a low credit score, it just requires a little more down payment. You know, what kind of down payment? You know, and then I asked them, what kind of down payment could you cut? And then I try and push it on up, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, he was the only one that came in like $13,000. But, yeah, I see what you're saying about him.
Right.
Yeah, so, but that's only 8 people. There's a bunch more people out there.
There you go. And you hadn't even started advertising it yet.
No, not really. In fact, I just put my seller financing sign out today.
Good.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see what happens.
There you go. That's good.
Let me ask you another question. These properties that you're buying in Georgia, do you put eyes on them?
Somebody does, but I don't.
Are you like paying? There was a, I don't remember somewhere in one of the meetings. There's somebody that you can call that actually goes out there and puts eyes on.
Yeah, there's BPO PhotoFlow and WeGoLook.com, but we have somebody go look at it, whether it's a realtor or somebody from our office or whatever. This one's about 6 hours away from us, so we had a realtor go down and take some pictures of it, take a look at it.
Right. Yeah, I've looked at a lot of the pictures online of properties I was interested in, and the pictures look good, and then I called the real estate agent, and they're like, oh, my God, you know, they didn't show that big hole in the ceiling where it's been leaking and termites. And,
well, that's
you know,
probably on the auctions. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, see, the auctions, here's the thing. All the auction listings have a realtor attached to it, and the realtor will send the auction company 30 or 40 pictures, but the auction company puts the best 5 or 10 on.
Yes,
so
they do.
It's important that you call the realtor before you bid.
Right. Right, yeah. I'm kind of going to get away from the auctions. I'm going to start looking at other things because the auctions are, I don't know, the titles are just all messed up. And
it's tough to get any traction with the auctions.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've bid on a lot of properties, and then when it goes outside of my comfort zone, I get out. But, the auction companies are I don't know. I just think that the bank will take it back. And matter of fact, this guy at Huntable Law Firm told me, he said, the bank will take it back and sell it right off the bat and worry about the title later.
Exactly. They will. They'll do that. They'll worry about that when they get it sold.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm kind of going to get away from that because it just ties up your money.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm gonna get back to HUD again.
There you go. That's good. Good. Well, I hope that helped.
Yes. Thank you.
Good.
Thank
good. You. Who's got a question?
Larry, this is Jeremy. You've used the term land contract quite a bit on tonight's call, and and Heidi and I are still relatively new to your program. Are you using that simply interchangeably with deeds from a state-by-state basis, or are there some true fundamental differences between selling on a deed versus a land contract, and what's a good resource for us to find more information?
Great question, great question. In seller financing, there's basically three different types of documentation. Some states are deed of trust states, and some states are mortgage states. In either one of those, when you're selling a property with seller financing, you actually deed the property to the buyer, and then you either take back a mortgage or take back a deed of trust. It depends on whether it's a judicial or non-judicial state. And in the back of your Filthy Riches course, you will see every state's listing and which one is which.
Okay.
A land contract is different in the sense that it is a form of seller financing. However, it's a type of financing where it's basically a contract. It's sometimes called a contract for deed or an installment sale contract, where it's just a contract. It's a long document that's probably 10 or 15 pages long, and it spells out the details of the transaction. Like, you're buying it for $69,900, you're putting $5,000 down, the balance is financed at 9% for 20 years, $583.92 a month. We're going to escrow for taxes and insurance. You're responsible for repairs, maintenance. Only use it for personal residence. You can't create any kind of problems in the neighborhood. You can't do anything illegal there. If you don't keep the property up, we can take, you know, we can get the property back or cancel the land contract. If you don't pay the taxes or insurance, we can cancel the land contract. And you must get insurance listing us as mortgagee, just all those different things. And at the way it works is at the end of the 20 years, after they've made all their payments, then they get the deed to the house. The deed maintains, the deed is held by the seller until they pay it off in full. And that's what's called a land contract or a contract for deed or installment sale contract. And the advantage is depending on the state, sometimes you can avoid having to go through foreclosure to get the property back in the event of default by the borrower. Not all the time, but sometimes if they challenge you and dispute you, you may have to go through foreclosure. But for the most part, you just get them to sign a cancellation agreement. And some states require land contracts to be recorded, and some states do not.
So is the foreclosure process the primary benefit in a state that allows you to process it that way?
Right. Yeah, you can avoid having to go through foreclosure to get the property back.
Okay.
Good. Did that help?
I'm going through one of those right now, Larry. This is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
I bought a HUD house for $20,000 and a guy had it on the market for $39,000, and the guy came and gave me $35,000 cash from a slip and fall settlement, and I think we took back a note for $10,000 and he defaulted on it. So then they put on a defense, they lost their defense, and now it's moved to landlord tenant court. So we're cautiously optimistic that we'll get it back, but it'll probably have taken us a year.
Wow. It was worth the wait, huh?
Well, it's worth $80,000 now.
Yeah, there you go. That's,
you know,
good.
He gave me.
See,
gave
it
me
was found money.
Grand
he walked away
it.
From it.
Yep.
It was found money to him. Slip and fall settlement. Probably in Walmart or grocery store or something.
He's got another one cooking too. He's trying to make us whole by making us wait for the next settlement. So
yeah.
I had my attorney write the personal injury attorneys. Telling them that if he didn't deliver the place in broom clean condition, we were going to seek injunctive relief on that settlement and tie that up too.
There you go.
So they wouldn't get paid.
There you go. That's good thinking.
Two things that bother attorneys: not getting paid and messing with their license.
That's
my favorite,
good.
My favorite pastime.
Well, good for you. That's good. So who's got a question?
Hey, Larry, this is Brian. I got a question for you.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, a couple of the bank-owned properties that I've been calling on here lately, I've actually gotten through to the asset manager on the first call instead of what I'm trying to call the listing agent. I didn't know if there would be any advantage in talking to the asset manager themselves or if I should just keep going to the listing agent.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Keep on calling them and see how it goes, but they are going to probably have you submit the offer through the realtor. But if their number is on that website where you're going directly to the bank-owned websites, if their number's there, then I don't see any reason why you couldn't call them if their number's there. Just, hey, I was on your website. I saw the property. What's the story on it? How soon are you looking to get rid of it? If you have many offers on it? You know, all those little questions. And, you know, entice them with the fact that they could probably sell you multiple properties.
Yeah, definitely. The one that was most open to conversation, I did have that whole conversation with her, and then she just said, well, let me send you to the listing agent anyway. So she gave me his number, and I called him. So
that's good. Good for you. That's great. Cool. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, what kind of yields are you having on note sales? Like, if you flip them immediately, how much of a yield people looking for on average?
Well, on the typical deals I've been doing, which are the higher price deals that I've been doing, I have actually been selling them at a 12% yield.
Wow.
On the higher price deals, not the 50 richest type deals, but the higher price deals.
And how about on the filthy riches type deals?
Do what?
How about on the filthy riches type deals?
Oh,
that's why I'm here.
Those are going to be, you know, 15, 18, 20, sometimes 25 on the low price cheap houses. But here's the key that you got to remember.
Is that with seasoning or without?
Go ahead.
With seasoning or without?
Without. But here's the thing you got to remember. With the filthy riches deal, if you're picking up a house for $5,000, let's say it was listed for $15,000, you pick it up for $5,000, you sell it for $30,000, and now you're trying to sell the note for $20,000. Well,
right.
Nobody's going to buy that note for $20,000 if that house is really not worth, you know, $30,000.
Right.
Because
of course,
if the house is only worth $15,000, they're not going to pay $20,000 for a note on a house. So you gotta also make sure, even if you're getting a good deal on the house and you're only paying $5,000 for it, you gotta make sure that the real value is there so you can sell the note at a decent price for the note buyer. Make sense?
What kind of note to value are they looking for?
Well, they're probably going to want to be in it, just like any other investor, 70% or less.
Right. Cool.
Good. Did that help?
Yeah, so around 20%? Because I was figuring like 30% if I had to flip it right away.
On the note sale?
Yeah.
You can do 30% on a lower priced property. You know, just, I mean, listen, it's less about the yield to you and more about how much can you make on the deal by selling the note, but it's more about the yield to the note buyer.
Right. I think I'm talking about a 30% discount.
Right.
I mean, the 30% yield. I'm sorry. I'm getting confused. The
30% yeah, that's okay.
Yield
that's
to
okay.
The note buyer.
Yeah, 30% is a good yield on one of these cheap, filthy, riches houses.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Larry, after you season the note, say, for a year, what kind of yield does the investor look to get?
Well, it just depends on the investor. I try to deal with individuals. But after you've seasoned the note for a year, if you have seasoned it for a year, I would go to an institution because that's where you're going to get more money. because the institutions, institutions, they want seasoning. They either want seasoning or they want to buy a partial.
And will they buy the mobile homes?
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
I've had them quote mobile homes, but they want to buy partials. If it's non-seasoned or if it's seasoned, they're okay with it. But if it's non-seasoned, they would rather buy a partial.
Gotcha. Okay.
Were we speaking of institutions or individuals when you were answering my question?
Either one.
Okay.
But it really, if you're dealing with individuals, it's whatever you negotiate.
Well, I don't have that group of people right now. I was thinking of going to the notebook.
Well, no, yeah, sure you do. Where do you live?
Where do I live? If I live in Connecticut.
What's the big county there?
The big rich county is Fairfield. I'm the last town.
You go to Fairfield County website, you look up at the Register of Deeds, and you look everybody that owns property in the name of Equity Trust. And then you look at the mailing address and you mail them a postcard to sell them a note.
Wow. That is slick. It's a little bit harder here because we don't have county government, but I understand.
Right. Good, good, good. You can buy those lists, too. There's websites that you could go to buy those lists for anywhere from 10 cents up to a dollar or so a piece.
Deedholder lists. Okay.
Yeah. Good. I hope that helped.
Sure it helped.
Good. Who else has a question? You guys have had some really good questions. It's been really good conversation tonight about all these notes and lease options and all that good stuff. This is really good stuff. I'm glad you guys have these kind of questions. Anybody else have a question?
Well, Larry, what's the typical turnaround from putting a place, closing on a purchase and getting it out on a contract for deed and getting the notes sold?
Okay, that's a really good question. It's a lot longer than wholesaling a deal. It's probably you're looking at 60 to 90 days from turnaround,
right,
from buy to sell, from buy to sell the note.
That's what I was thinking. 90 days sounded.
Yeah, 60
right.
to 90 days from buy to sell the note.
Okay. We got one more question, Larry. Billy Howard, does he service the loan as well?
Yeah, well, in North Carolina he doesn't, but South Carolina he does.
Who would you recommend in North Carolina?
Oh, wow. I'm using AFTS right now. I like AFTS. I like Peak. Either one of those two I would recommend.
I could just Google AFTS or Peak.
Yeah. AFTS is American Funds Transfer Service, but Peak Servicing, Google Peak Loan Servicing, or AFTS Loan Servicing, and they'll come up. And they'll escrow and all that stuff for you, escrow for taxes and insurance. They'll do all that.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, good.
I don't want to bother.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Good. Who else got a question?
Hey, Larry, this is Jeremy. One last question. When you're looking at properties out of state or even just outside of a reasonable driving distance, do you ever leave utilities on when you make those purchases? Because I know, for example, here in Tennessee, all the local utility companies require you to come in, sign paperwork in person, make a deposit, et cetera, et cetera. And that's been feasible for the couple of properties we've done this summer where it's hot. We want to be able to run the AC.
Right.
But it doesn't seem to work well with the Filthy Rich's model, especially if you're starting to look out of state.
The short answer is no, we don't.
You
have
don't?
We had an occasion where we had to.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we had one where we had to have some sort of an inspection or something. I can't even remember what it was. A buyer was getting an inspection or something, and we had to send somebody down. Like you said, you got to go in person. I don't get that, but you got to go in person.
Yeah, it seems
so
arcane.
Give them the money, I'm like, my gosh, this is 2016. You can't do this with a credit card and a digital application? Come on. No, you got to go in person and stand there, wait in line, hand in the application.
Right.
It's just a pain. So, no, the short answer is no. But have we had to do it? Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it seems like with these properties, especially, you know, being the middle of summer, and most people have questions about the HVAC systems and they want to make sure that it has been inspected and to actually, you know, feel that cool air blowing. So.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it sounds like the bottom line is it's case by case and you really just have to evaluate what you're going to do with the property and the price points you're looking at and see if it makes sense.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Sure, no problem. Who else has a question?
I was just going to add to that. I went and had my water turned on today over there in Shelby. Had to drive to Lawndale to get it done, 30 minutes away.
I've been over there. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And then it was a $25 deposit. I had to show proof of ownership in the whole nine yards.
And it's a little hole in the wall down on a little country road. I've been
yeah.
in the same place.
Absolutely ridiculous, isn't it?
Yep, that's the only place I know of that you still have to go to in person.
It was crazy.
Been there, done that, been there, done that.
Got the T-shirt, right?
Exactly. Who else has a question?
I got tons of them. I just can't think of one right now.
You guys have had some really good questions tonight. This has been a good call. It's been a long call,
Larry,
too. It's almost 11 o'clock. This is good. You guys got some good stuff. Who's got a question?
Larry, you still, this is Jeff again. So you're still getting the $5,000 Filthy Riches deals, right?
I do. I'm doing more double wides, more expensive houses right now, but I just bought a single wide the other day for $1,500.
Uh-huh. With the dirt?
Do what?
Well,
no,
with the land,
no. It was in a park.
In a park.
Yeah, it's in a park. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with those kind of deals. You can put those deals in your IRA.
There's nothing wrong.
That's 3 month payback.
There you go.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
What kind of condition is that thing in?
This one was a lady who lived in it. She was moving somewhere with some family, and she was living there. So I knew it was livable. But she was a hoarder. So I said, look, before I can pay you, the house has got to be empty. It's got to be empty before
right.
I can pay you. So, but anyway, yeah, she's moving out. But the only thing is the house is livable. Yeah, could it use paint and carpet? Yes. But there was one piece of floor in front of the shower that was rotten, but she already had a piece of plywood, and the plywood was there. She said she just hadn't put it in yet, and it's just laying over the floor. So that needs to be done. But other than that, it's not too bad.
What year is that?
It was a 96.
Oh, that's a good year because I had one under contract here for $2,000 in a park in like 1975. My partner talked me out of it, you know, because I don't know.
Yeah, the only thing about the ones in the park, you just got to make sure that you get your buyer approved by the park owner before you sell it to them.
Mm-hmm.
When you sell it to your buyer, you make sure it's subject to park approval for the lot rent. Good. Anybody else have a question?
Going once.
You know the drill, right?
Well, it's almost
11. I appreciate all your information, man. Big help.
Man, thanks a lot.
Thank
I appreciate you being on here.
Yes, thank
all
you,
right.
Larry. This was very helpful.
Awesome.
Thank you, Larry.
You're welcome. Wow, I'm not even doing this once or twice. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Listen, you always know that you can email me, larry@larrygoins.com, in between these calls if you have any questions. I'm here for you. So thanks for your business, and keep getting out there and getting it and doing those deals.
Cool. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You guys have a great night.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.